joining us on the program as she does every other week, here to talk turkey, really talk turkey. Pam Colleen, how are you?
I'm great, Tom. How are you today?
I am excellent. We were speculating a while ago because I love turkey and I have no problem cooking a turkey. And usually before Thanksgiving, I give out Tom's turkey tips on how to properly cook a bird. And we were thinking it's pretty much the biggest thing you can put in your oven. And that's why we cook a turkey. There's not many things bigger that will fit in your oven. I guess you can get a bigger side of beef, but that's way more expensive than turkey. It's also one of the cheaper things you can serve.
Yeah, and it's absolutely traditional as well. I mean, look, we only eat it a few times a year at the very most. It is, you know, quite a large animal to throw in the oven, but you want to have a large group of people there too. So it is, it's a traditional food for a great celebration. But I think there's a few things though that people do wrong, that they make mistakes around a turkey dinner, and I want to talk about some of these mistakes that people make with regards to their turkey. And one of the things that I notice people do with either chicken or turkey is that they don't eat the skin. And unfortunately, things like chicken and turkey, they can be quite lean, and so you want to enhance the fat. You want to eat as much animal fat as possible when you're eating protein. Otherwise, it can cause a lot of digestive distress because you need the animal fat there in order to assimilate the protein. So when you're eating something lean or low fat, you want to add extra fat, and one of the ways to do that is to eat the chicken skin or the turkey skin. And another thing we're going to talk about, Tom, and I know you're very good at making gravy, but another thing you want to do at turkey dinner is to not hold back on the gravy, because it's another nutrient dense. It's another source of animal fat to help you assimilate the nutrients that are sitting on your plate. And I know you've got some secrets to making a great gravy.
Well, it's, and I've posted it before, it is way more complex than it should be. But it's a great gravy. It's a great gravy. I want to ask you, though, when it comes to turkey meat, most people prefer light, but dark meat being richer in flavor, is it because there's more fat in dark meat? I mean, if you had to make a choice, I mean, is that why dark meat is more flavorful?
You know, I think that what they talk about is the purine that's in the meat, the dark meat versus the white meat. But, and I get a lot of people who think that they, you know, should they avoid dark meat or should they eat dark meat? And I just tell them to eat a mixture. I mean, that's, I know a lot of people fight over the dark meat, but I think you just want to have a mixture between the white and the dark. I don't think there's any set rules because there's a very little amount of dark meat usually on the turkey. So,
but it's not significantly fattier is what I'm trying to say.
I don't see it as a significant issue, but a lot of people, unfortunately, do see it as a significant issue. But the vast majority of the meat on the bird is going to be white. So if you want to throw a little bit of the dark meat on there as a variety, that's fine. But certainly I wouldn't eat all dark meat.
As well, is there a difference in terms of cooking the bird as to how healthy it is? Because I got a specific style I want to talk to you about in a second. But does it matter how we cook the bird in terms of whether or not it's going to be more nutritional or less nutritional?
I just think that the flavor it might be different if you cook it too quickly at too high a heat.
Okay.
So the chefs will tell you, you know, cook it at a low temperature. And that means a lot of people cook their turkeys. I don't know about you, Tom, but you probably spend the entire day cooking the turkey at a pretty low temperature. And that's what the gold standard would be, I think. And you'll notice that it's going to be a juicier, more tender piece of meat as well when you do that.
Well, except when it comes to the gold standard of cooking turkeys, deep fried turkey. Where the amazing thing is, I mean, we don't have to batter it. I mean, it comes in the skin. And if it's all thawed and you drop it in at a fairly high heat, but it's not, I forget what the oil is supposed to be. But I mean, it takes, because it locks in everything. I mean, you don't have to worry about the bird getting dried out. And there's, I mean, it adds a little bit of fat to the outside, but it's certainly not, you know, deep frying everything on the inside. Deep fried turkey. By far,
isn't
to me,
in the southern states, isn't
yes.
that a tradition in the southern states?
That is the best way. That's the best way to cook a turkey. To
I
me,
have
is
never had one like that.
It locks everything in. It's terrific, and you don't have to. It's not like, you know, fried chicken. You think of fried chicken where we have to put it in flour, then in, you know, and then we got to dredge it, and they got to put an egg wash on it to make sure the coating sticks. No, you don't have to do anything to the skin, and you just drop it in, and it's about 45 minutes to an hour. You can cook a full bird. which is great because your timing, because one of the things people find problematic with turkeys is, well, it's 15 to 20 minutes a pound, which can mean on a 15-pound bird, that's a 75-minute variable. I mean, waiting for that bird to be done, it's a matter of, are you eating at 5:30 or 6:30? Because it all depends on the turkey. Where in deep frying, you know exactly when you're eating. This bird will take exactly 1 hour.
Interesting. Now, do you have any pasture-raised turkey sources in your region?
I'm not sure. I should find that out. I know, I'll get the listeners, so this is a good chance. So you want pasture, that's the gold standard you would recommend. Pasture raised?
Yeah, they're very difficult to find.
Okay.
And when they're pasture raised, I do notice they don't tend to be quite as large as some of the more commercial sources. So if you can find the pasture raised sources in your region, that's about the gold standard, but I have to emphasize they're difficult to find, because turkeys are very hard to raise, apparently, according to the farmers I speak with. And you have to actually order them in advance if you want them, because there's such a huge demand for the pasture raised sources of turkey.
Well, I guess, yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, you just can't go, I'd like a turkey. Well, we're out of turkeys. Or, you know, we have such a, I mean, I can always go and get a fresh or a frozen turkey at the supermarket. But if you want the, you know, just like we're looking at naturally raised cattle who eat grass only as being the gold standard. I imagine the same with free-range chickens and turkeys.
That's right. The farmers I know actually take orders sometimes 6 months in advance, because they have to get the babies, and they have to feed them and raise them and get them ready for, say, Christmas or Thanksgiving or Easter or what have you. So you usually have to order them in advance, and they're much more expensive than buying the commercial sources as well.
15 minutes after 11 o'clock. When we come back, we're going to talk a little more turkey with Pam Colleen, but as well, what to do with the carcass. Many people throw it out, but Pam will tell you, no, that's a great source. You're not going to chew on the bones, but there's a great way to get all the nutrients, especially from the bone marrow and all the flavorful parts of the bird, extracted. How to get it out? By making a bone broth. So we'll talk to Pam about using a turkey carcass for a bone broth when we come back. 16 minutes after 11 o'clock. My name's Tom McConnell, nutritional consultant. Pam Colleen joining us on the program today. If you got a turkey question or a gravy question or a bone broth question, 905-688-2582. 1-877-610-2582, #610 on the Bell Mobility Network. Email McConnell at 610CKTB.com or send me a text at 610-10. 20 minutes after 11 o'clock, nutritional consultant Pam Colleen with us talking turkey. Pam, I got one texter who says, don't eat just dark meat. Yeah, and don't eat the red part of a candy cane either. Although, I was looking for something and I just sent you this link in terms of the difference between dark meat and white meat. And apparently dark meat has much more fat, and of course your favorite fat, much more saturated fat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just much more tender meat, isn't it? And,
yeah.
So it is very flavorful, but sometimes there's not very much on a turkey.
True. There you go. Yeah, yeah. Don't fight over it. But yeah, if you're looking for saturated fat, dark meat is 3.4 grams per cup. And light meat is just 1.4. So there's a little more protein, but a lot less fat in light meat. So the light meat is what we call leaner. But as you know, Pam has pointed out, you want the animal fats. And dark meat contains more zinc, riboflavin, niacin, thiamine, vitamins B6 and 12, amino acids, iron, and 11 times more zinc than tuna. And 3 times as much iron as, that's dark beef, sorry. Dark turkey, selenium, phosphorus.
I can see all your listeners fighting over it now, Christmas dinner.
I need the dark meat! Give me the dark meat! All right, here's another text question. And this is something I suggested, and I even risked going with my father-in-law, who's doing a different turkey recipe this year. And I said, make sure you brine it. Make sure you brine it. And a listener asks, is it healthy, Pam, to give my turkey a long soak in a salt brine? I use a coarse sea salt as it makes for a very moist bird. And I've always recommended for the 24 hours prior to you starting your cook, brine the bird to keep all the moisture in. Are you worried about excessive salt if you brine the bird?
You know, I've never done that, and I really can't comment because I have never done that. But I suppose if you're confident that the taste and the outcome is what you want, then I'd say go ahead and do it. I would not worry about the salt, no. The we have a lot of salt phobia out there, and that's unfortunate because salt we've used for millennia in generations and in different civilizations and so on. We shouldn't be afraid of salt. I tell my clients to eat about a teaspoon to a teaspoon and a half of salt every day. You need salt for good health in general. So, no, I would not worry about the brine and the salt.
All right. Let me just recommend if your bird, I don't know how you cook the bird, but in terms of if your bird, if you've ever worried about it being too dry, let me tell you, by brining it, which is just simply a cup of salt into a cup and a cup of sugar into enough water to totally soak the bird for 24 hours, it makes the most tender bird possible.
Are you going to cook us Christmas dinner, Tom?
I do every year. Every year. This has been passed on to me now since my parents are no longer with us. I'm in charge of the bird. So I know how to cook a bird. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. Now, you know, though, the next step in terms of once your bird is cooked and the carcass is picked over, many people throw it into you know, the recycling bin or whatever you do with the carcass. But your suggestion is there is so much nutrition still left just with the carcass.
Right. Our ancestors knew to use the entire part of the animal, right? The way they never threw anything out. So the bones should be used to make bone broth. And this is a very medicinal food. And unfortunately, a lot of people take the carcass for granted. They throw it out and they don't realize that it could be turned into medicine. I have cookbooks that date back into the 1700s. And these cookbooks outline that there's, you know, that they always have a section in the cookbook for what they called back then were the invalids, people who were sick, the convalescing in the hospitals and so on. And they knew to give these people bone broth to help them heal. In fact, bone broth for centuries has been used to cure all sorts of illnesses, including digestive disorders. There are lots of components in the bone broth that are nurturing your bones, your joints, and the digestive tract itself. So I tell people to use bone broth to seal and heal the gut lining because of all these wonderful ingredients in the bone broth. If you make it properly, there should be a lot of gelatin, and so it can thicken up when you put it in the fridge, and that's very medicinal. It helps you with your digestion in terms of when you're eating the food, helps you absorb the nutrients in the food that you're eating. It helps in terms of delivering things like glucosamine and chondroitin. So it's going to help your joints, and a lot of people go out and buy a lot of expensive supplements with glucosamine and chondroitin in them. But really, if you make your own bone broth, that's where you're going to get a lot of this, a lot of these types of nutrients. And ladies, who are using Botox treatments, they don't need to worry about Botox treatments. There's a much better way to prevent or get rid of wrinkles, and that is to drink a bone broth because of all the collagen that's in the bone broth as well.
Now, when you talk about bone broth, is that term interchangeable with stock? Like if I'm making a stock, so a stock and a bone broth are generally used in the same term?
Yeah, they're pretty much synonymous terms. And when you make a stock or bone broth, then you can use those to make things like sauces and soups and so on.
There's it's your base, right? It's usually your base where, you know, it adds so much more flavor to any soup or sauce rather than just water or what, any, I guess you could, you know, liquid, but commonly we can buy chicken broth or beef broth, but again, it's, you know, commercially prepared and it's probably...
Commercially prepared broth, unfortunately, they probably don't have a lot of the nutrients in there that you would want.
Exactly.
Because, one of the things that people do is they skim the fat off the broth, and that's not what you want to do. You want the fat in there. So remember, the fat that's going to be in the turkey skin, that's going to be in the gravy, that's going to be in the soup, it's this fat that contains what are known as the fat-soluble activators. And they're called activators because they help you assimilate the minerals in the meal that you're eating. So they're fantastic nutrients, but because we're so fat-phobic today, we remove things like the top of the soup or the top of the gravy, get rid of all that fat. But that's the most medicinal part that you want.
Let me quickly talk to you about gravy. What am I looking out for in gravy? Anything I should avoid? Actually, let me take a break and I'll come back and talk to you about gravy because it's one of my favorite subjects.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, so we'll take a quick break and come back and talk about gravy with Pam Pelline for a little bit. 27 minutes after 11 o'clock. Have a turkey question for Pam or how to make better bone broth? I mean, I want to get into a quick recipe. What am I looking for? What do I have to do? The first time I made broth, it's wrong to think longer is better. Longer is not better. Oh, I'll just reduce it down. No, take out the bones. Stephanie Savern is shaking her head at me. 3 hours. Is that about right, Stephanie Savern?
That's about right.
All right. Yeah. I was on that stove 8-9 hours. No essentially glue. Because you extract everything. You take out everything. You reduce everything down. It's like, yeah, You've made glue.
Yeah.
You've made glue. All right. So we'll talk to Pam a little bit more about bone broth and gravy when we come back. Stephanie Sabourin standing by with the news. This is 610 CKTV. 4 minutes after 11 o'clock, just talking to Pam Colleen about turkey gravy and making a broth afterwards. Joe Cahill, what's your favorite part of the bird? Dark meat or light meat?
The innards. Oh, I love the innards, Tom.
The
McCullough.
Innards?
Oh, yeah.
Like the giblets.
I'm a dark meat guy.
Okay.
A lot of people, you got to save the white meat. Go ahead. Hey, give me a good chicken leg or a drum and I'm a happy boy.
Perfect. What's coming up on your show today?
Pam
Colleen, I got to ask you, where do you get, though, a good recipe? Because my first foray into making a stock was a disaster because I thought, you know, oh, you just cook it longer is better. Oftentimes, if I'm cooking a big pork shoulder, longer is better. Oh, sure. With stock, it's like, No. There's a time limit. So I didn't know. Where's a good recipe? Where do I go to?
Well, actually, I do have a link on my homepage, which is just pamcolleen.com. But the other day I interviewed a chef in California. His name is Lance Roll, and he has a bonebroth.com website. It's just bonebroth.com.
Really? Bonebroth.com? I can remember that.
And I think he's got another website, theflavorchef.com. Anyway, he has just started a bone broth company in Southern California, and he's already got his product in some of the stores. And what he does is, and this is what most recipes will tell you, is you soak the bones or simmer the bones for about 18 hours. And in the bone broth, in the liquid itself, you want to throw a little bit of vinegar in there so that you acidify the water. And in acidifying the water, that's going to help leach more minerals out of the bones, and that's what you want.
Because I thought by cooking it longer, I take more of, and although it's not bad, the collagen out. But when you take too much of the collagen out, it then leaves it gluey.
Yes, but that's what you want. That's actually what you want. Then you're going to get more of the nutrients, more minerals, more collagen, more of that gelatinous substance, and the gelatin.
Yeah.
That's what you want to heal your gut lining.
So he's of the opinion, yeah, cook it longer. I was thinking you cook it shorter.
Well, and there's people out there that have what are called, known as the perpetual bone broth. And what they do is they put bones in a crock pot.
Right.
And basically you simmer the bones in the water all week long. And every time you take out a serving of bone broth to sip on, like a cup of tea, for example, then you replenish the water. And then you have the bone broth on your kitchen counter all week long and don't have any excuses not to eat it. And at the end of the week, then you're going to throw out the bones, and they should be very soft by then. And you can throw them out, or apparently there's even recipes you can make from the bone broth, or the actual bones that are softened. I don't know what that is. I've never done that, but some of the cultures around the world have done that.
Interesting. And almost like when we have a sourdough bread. You know, I guess you could add new bones to that bone broth, but with a sourdough bread, not fresh, but, I mean, you keep adding to it.
Well, you have the mother, right?
The mother, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, so every generation, they keep what's known as the mother that would have been brought over from their ancestors from Europe, for example. And this is going to change the taste of the sourdough bread that you make, the taste and the texture. And every culture around the world has that where the sourdough bread is part of their culture. You notice that their sourdough bread does indeed vary from one culture to the other. And it has to do with this mother that they use to ferment the grain.
You know what's interesting? So I'm on bonebroth.com. And it says, when the batch is cooled, it has the consistency of firm jello.
That's right.
Yeah. And it's like,
exactly,
it's
what you want.
High concentration of gelatin and collagen. And it's accomplished by using a high ratio of feet and bones to water. It's like, well, yeah, all right. I'm not thinking about the feet, but yeah.
But Tom, I mean, these are a hot commodity. When you go to these outdoor markets, you know, and you see that there's chicken feet for sale, you'll see that the Asians know to use the chicken feet, for example, to make bone broth. And they're going to be the first in line for those chicken feet. And people in North America, us Caucasians, are just catching on to the medicinal properties of making bone broth out of chicken feet.
All right. And so I have this batch that is now the consistency of jello. And what can I freeze it? How do I keep, okay, so I can, and I know people, you can make individual, for instance, I get an ice tray, and I'll fill it, and then I'll freeze it, and then I can pop them out individually, or, I mean, is that how I divide it up?
That's a great idea, Tom. That's a fantastic idea. So what you do is you put the bone broth in these ice cube trays, and then you have little individual servings, essentially. So you can just add a little hot water to it and drink it in the afternoon as a pick-me-up, you know, instead of a cup of tea or coffee.
Or add it to, I mean, if you're adding a soup or a stew and you want to put in the broth, you can do it that way as well.
That's right. Or one a or sauce. Two. You might want
or
to add
sauce,
it to
yeah.
sauce. Yeah, absolutely. If you're making rice and you want to add a little extra flavor in your rice, then you just
a great idea.
Oh, yeah. It'll give it a lot more flavor. Absolutely.
All right.
More nutrition, too.
Now, finally, although it's gotten such a bad rap because it symbolizes excess, if you will. Gravy, to me, is one of the best things. And it's not this, I mean, because we take a little fat out, but I mean, essentially it is taking broth into a roux. You know, we're making the stock already, or a basic stock, quick stock, and then we're taking, we're making a roux out of butter and flour, and we're combining it, and we're getting all the bits off the bottom of the pan. I love gravy.
It's delicious.
It's
incredible. But I know people who make gravy, and they will literally take off the fat. And that's the last thing you want to do, because the gravy is going to be poured on your entire meal, ideally, and that's where you're getting this extra fat to assimilate the minerals in all of the foods that are sitting on your plate.
What is your, do you have any tips for making gravy? Because as I said before, I have this intricately long, although it's not that many steps, it just takes a long time to make the gravy, but it's 20 minutes at a time over 3 or 4 hours.
Well, Tom, I think you've got it down to an art and a science. Myself, all I do is really add, sneak in a little extra butter to make sure that there's that much more fat. But I couldn't compete with your gravy. I know I already have a bit of an idea of what you do, but I think, I mean, I'm anxious to hear what you do. I don't care how complicated it is. It sounds amazing.
It just takes a while to render all the flavor out. I mean, you have to take the neck and the giblets, and we fry them up to release their juices, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then the giblets, I know people don't like giblets in their gravy, but you can dice them and you can shred the meat of the neck, again, which is almost a wasted part of the turkey. But when we get all the juices, which means we get all the flavor out of there, and then we have onions, and then we cook it for a while, and we reduce it down, and then we add stock. This would be good if you had a last Thanksgiving's turkey stock still available, and then we cook it for a while, and we reduce it down, then we make a roux and let that simmer for a while, then we combine the two and then cook it down for a bit, and then we just add the juice from the gravy from the tray. And that's it. But it just takes a long time. And you know, making anything involving reduction, like a stock is, just takes time to get the excess water out. We just take something thin and we want to thicken it up.
Yeah.
So it just takes a while.
Cream. Yeah. You said you add cream?
And at the end, yeah. Oh, at the end, it's either a tablespoon or two of cream or butter just to give it really, and I know you do it for the fat purposes. I do it for the appearance purposes, just to give it a sheen, it just makes it, it just gives it a richer flavor, but also a richer look.
Yes.
So just make sure you stir it in and give it.
Do you pour it through a sieve? Do you actually, you know, because some of the, you know, skin or other particles could show up in the gravy. Do you actually...
I pour it through skin because people are leery about the giblets. People do not want to be eating turkey heart, although chicken liver is terrific. It's the one liver I like is chicken liver and turkey liver. But, you know, the giblets are the liver, the kidneys, and is it the heart? But the, you know, the and the neck meat. Mm-hmm. People are, at my family, a little...
Yeah, well, it's
sensitive.
Too bad because the organ meats are the most nutrient-dense part of the turkey.
I know. But I just have just a wire mesh. So I just, you know, just the big parts and anything extra, like maybe I missed a chunk of onion. So that all gets filtered out and then it's, I have it on my blog. On my blog, I think I've posted it, but I'll repost it for this weekend for sure. So people can, and I've had great reviews from people. I tried this a while ago. I think it was in the Globe and Mail and I tried it and I was like, come on, how good could it be? And then everyone was like, that is terrific gravy. That is awesome gravy. I'm like, wow. All right. And now I can't go back. Now I can't go back to making a simple gravy.
When you master the art of making gravy, bone broth, there's no going back. And, you know, where bone broth is concerned, you know, people have no idea. They've been making bone broths for generations, and they don't even know that it's for medicine, that it's medicinal. They just think that it's just something you do. And unfortunately, you know, our ancestors did it because they wanted to be practical and use every part of the animal. But now we know the medicine that's in things like bone broth and even animal fats.
Well, I'll be sure to make a broth on our turkey is Boxing Day. So I'll be sure to make a turkey on the day after Boxing Day. I'll keep the carcass. I'm not doing anything that night, to be honest. And then on the 27th, I'll make a bone broth, and I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah, make sure you soak it for about 18 hours, though.
I know. Going simmer, against simmer everything I thought I've done. All right, I'll go completely against what I've been told, and I'll do it the way I originally did it, which was maybe I didn't do it enough then. I was only 8 or 9 hours. I was halfway there.
Yeah, no, about 18 hours is what you want.
Okay.
So, and you, the thicker the better, because you want all that nice gelatin in there.
There you go. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Now, I got a text. Country Corner Meats in Welland sells free-range turkeys. All right. Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Fantastic.
So now we know there's free-range turkeys at Country Corner Meats down in Welland. And if you know another place, send me a note and we'll pass it along. Pam Colleen, always a pleasure. Merry Thanks. Christmas to you and yours.
Merry Christmas to you, Tom. Thanks so much. Take care.
And we'll look forward to more great tips from you in 2013.
Sounds great. Happy New Year.
You too. 46 minutes after 11 o'clock. When we come back, final story I want to get to, Mayan apocalypse and how the Mayans and Star Wars cross paths in the jungle. It's an interesting story about how the Mayan apocalypse and Star Wars are crossing paths. I'll tell you that story when we come back here on 610 CKTV. What's going on? What's going on?